Broadcasting from the gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer, and our guest for the evening is author, activist, and as he billed himself in promoting this show, three-time felon, Ed Rosenthal. We'll review the marijuana news of 2003, talk about our rights to grow our own medicine, the aristocracy be damned.
This program contains pre-recorded telephone discussions with listeners and Mr. Ed Rosenthal. Please do not call.
And give you a chance to ask Ed your marijuana questions. I just received Ed's great new book, The Best of Ask Ed, Your Marijuana Questions Answered. With just about a half hour and a different agenda for tonight's show, I first up want to announce our hero of the week and give you the lineup for the next 2 weeks.
This week on Cultural Baggage, we name for our drug reform hero of the week a man whose work I have admired for at least 5 years.
At trial, I was not allowed to mention anything about my cancer history. I couldn't bring in my five doctors to testify as to why I was using medical marijuana. I couldn't mention the fact that California voters changed the law and what I was doing was completely legal under state law. I couldn't bring in any of the, at the time, 8, now 7 government patients who get marijuana from the federal government for various medical conditions. So at that time, I ended up getting a 5-year sentence. Now that I'm out, I'm going to work on a project called Artists Helping End Marijuana Prohibition. Your listeners can go to it's at ahemp.org or ahemp.org.
And so as we close out the year 2003, we name Todd McCormick, author, activist, and another hellacious pot grower, as our drug reform hero of the week. Todd will be our guest here on Cultural Baggage in 2 short weeks. And next week on Cultural Baggage, the author of Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, a judicial indictment of the war on drugs, Superior Court Judge James P. Gray.
I see that our present Attorney General, that is the leader of the Department of Justice, John Ashcroft, is one of the most dangerous people in our country today. What he is doing with regard to the Constitution should cause concern, deep concern, for everyone in the United States of America.
Okay, we're proud to welcome our guest for the evening, and if you follow the drug war news at all, our guest really needs no introduction, but here goes. He's the author of a dozen or so books on numerous topics like growing marijuana or on how you can maintain your rights or keep from getting arrested. He's a fellow Pacifican who works with Dennis Bernstein's on the Flashpoints program and on his own Cannabis Chronicles. He's also working hard to end these crazy laws against cannabis. And he was convicted this year of providing marijuana clones for the city of Oakland, California, and sentenced to 1 day in jail by a federal judge. And I am pleased to welcome our guest, Ed Rosenthal.
Pleased to be with you.
Good evening, Ed. Welcome to Cultural Baggage. Ed, it's been quite an eventful year for marijuana reform here in the States. And if you would, give us your perception. Are we better off at the end of 2003 than we were at the beginning?
I think we certainly are. Ninth Circuit decision in the Raich decision, in the Raich case, said that marijuana, people who have medical marijuana recommendations can grow marijuana as long as there's no commerce in it. So a person could grow for a friend or for as a caregiver, or so that opened up the door, because they said that as long as it was for personal medical use, that there was no commerce and no interstate commerce involved. Now that opens up the door in two ways. One is that in most of this decision, you could take out medical and replace it with recreational, and it would come to the same conclusion. It would read the same, because if you're growing for personal use, there's still no interstate commerce, even if it's not medical use. And then the second second way that this can be interpreted is that not only that it's that it allows collectives and allows large conglomerations in a cooperative level as long as there isn't commerce in it. So I think that that's a very wide opening.
I think you're right, Ed, and it is wonderful news. Now, when last we talked, it was just after the Angel versus Ashcroft decision, and you had indicated something about talking with your lawyer and see if you can't make arrangements with the powers that be that you could start your garden again.
Well, the time isn't ripe to do that because the appeals court threw it back to the circuit court to make a final decision. So we're awaiting the final decision, but if it's what everybody expects it will be, I certainly am going to try and get court permission to cultivate for medical use. And I would probably try to join a collective if they'd have me.
If they'd have you, yes, indeed. Okay, now, what with the holiday season? I was in a wreck. I got robbed of my medicine, and I got to confess, I haven't had a chance to read your new book, The Best of Ask Ed, Your Marijuana Questions Answered. But from what I've been able to see, I mean, I'm about 40 pages in. It should be on every grower's coffee table. Tell us about the new book.
The new book is really a little different format than anything that was done before because I chose questions from a 10-year period and then looked at the answers that I had written, but every sentence in that book has been rewritten. Sometimes the answers have changed. Sometimes there's more information or new information. So some of the questions are the same, but I even changed some of the questions around because I didn't want to be dependent upon what was sent to me to be able to develop full answers. So it answers a lot of questions in a lot of different areas of cultivation, use, legal, medical, you know, all the usual things. And I realized that what I had to do was, when this came out, since it's not like a magazine where you throw away, where you can update it, so it had to be the most up-to-date information that was available. And that's what I've done.
Well,
and it's all, then what we did was we have links for more information. From one section, it will send you to another section to get more information on specific areas. So the whole book is interrelated like a big web.
It is. I noticed that in some instances you had responded to a question, and then apparently you got some additional input from some other readers that you included as well. That, you know, you're certainly willing to, you know, look at both sides of the equation. And it's very complete from what I see, very, very in-depth.
Yes, one of the things about doing a column like this is that there's a constant interaction with the readers. And having that kind of interaction, it sets me to research in areas that I might not have thought of researching. So that's a very... that's given me a lot of insights that I wouldn't have had. And a lot of readers have information that that they've come across and then turned me onto. So it's really, it's not a one-way street. You know, I think I learn more from my readers than they do from me, really.
All right. A nice two-way street of the information. Now, Ed, ironically, the January 1st, I will have my first column, if you will. It's in a local paper, the Houston Free Press, and it's called The Unvarnished Truth. And I'll be talking mostly drug war, you know, overall. But I don't know. It's kind of neat to get the first one, I guess, published.
I think that's great. I think that you'll do a great job, and you're certainly an asset to your community, and you're working in so many ways that, you know, it only takes a few people like you to develop some sort of thing going there, and I think that you're doing a great job at it.
Well, thank you, Ed. You know, when I first got into reform, you know, I was of the opinion we could whip these drug warriors in a couple of years, you know, but I'm finding out that the problem's a lot, I don't know, more deeply intertwined in the media and the various congresses and the medical profession. Where do you see us going? What's the next glimmer of light, and what dark road do you think the prohibs are going to want to take us down?
Well, I think Ashcroft has a vision of really oppressing marijuana people and trying to discredit medical marijuana, but it just isn't working. It's hard to carry falsehood around when people know the truth. And as more and more research is done in it, and as more and more countries change their attitudes about it, the federal government is going to find itself increasingly isolated. And I think with the Democratic administration, we might very well get a change. Now, I'm not advocating, voting Democratic, but I'd like to see a lot of pressure on the Democrats to change their official attitude.
Well,
can I mention one thing?
Yes, sir.
Let's say Gore had said, well, I think we should investigate medical marijuana instead of that it has no medical value. Well, that would have been his 100,000 voters in Florida.
You bet. 100,000 in every state.
I mean. Yeah. Or more.
Yeah. My guest next week, he's a fellow Californian, Judge James P. Gray. He's going to run for U.S. Senate under the Libertarian Party and try to rattle the cage out there even more in California. And what I hear, the city of San Francisco is still considering growing their own marijuana. How is that situation developing?
It's going very slowly because there's nobody there right now who's running that. It was an initiative, so it was a city ordinance that was passed, but there's nobody there implementing it, and there's no pressure on people to do it, because before, let's say 2-4 years ago, there were only a few clubs. There were maybe 5 or 6 dispensaries in San Francisco, so it was very easy to mobilize all the dispensaries to all, get directed. But you know how individualistic marijuana people are, and now there are many more dispensaries in the city, so it's hard to mobilize as a unified group right now. It's not that anybody's opposed to any of these things. It's just that there's also been a change in who's running them. It's more business people rather than advocates.
I hear you. Okay. To the listeners out there in Houston and Galveston or on the net,
please note this show was pre-recorded with listeners and Ed Rosenthal.
This is your chance to ask Ed your questions about marijuana, about civil rights, about his tribulations over this past year.
We love to hear from our listeners. Please write dean@unvarnishedtruth.org.
Ed, I want to go ahead and ask you my Ask Ed question, if you will.
Okay.
All right. I've noticed that the fresh buds that come into Texas, these are Mexican, 99% certain. And occasionally, some good sensimilla comes in, very fresh. I think it's still got the terpenoids and the flavonoids on it. And occasionally you get a seed in there. Are those seeds going to do any good as far as growing quality?
No, they're not going to be what you really want. The genetics is the main determinant of the quality of what you're going to get. It's just like if you have an apple from a tree where one apple tastes good, that most of those apples on that tree are going to taste good. And that's because all those apples have the same genetics. And so what a person should try to do is to find a variety that they like and then try to obtain those genetics. And there are a lot of advertisements by seed companies in Heads and Cannabis Cultural magazines and on the net. You can just go marijuana seeds on the net and you'll get dozens of companies and distributors. And there's also a company that rates them.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Not a company. It's just a service. It rates them by readers' responses.
All right. Well, Ed, we're going to take just a short little break.
Please make note of the fact that we have more than 60 of these audio programs on the air at cultural-baggage.com. www.marijuanaclub.com.
For thousands of years, marijuana has been known for its ability to safely provide for relaxation.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects.
Damage to the liver, the central nervous system, impaired vision, impaired sexual function, constant remorse and guilt, loss of family, friends, and employment, arrhythmia, high blood pressure, and heart attacks. Time's up. The answer, alcohol. Which, excluding car accidents, kills more than 120,000 U.S. citizens every year.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
The following message is brought to you by the U.S. Ministry of Homeland Security. The FBI is warning police nationwide to be alert for people carrying almanacs, cautioning that the popular reference books covering everything from abbreviations to weather trends could be used for terrorist planning.
Yeah, it's a shame they've decided that they're going to go after specific types of information. Books, you know? It's a shame. Almanacs. Ed, we do have a couple of callers online, and I want to invite the rest of you.
Please note, this show contains pre-recorded discussions with listeners who wanted to ask Ed Rosenthal.
Let's go ahead and pick up Chris, line one. Hi, Chris.
Hi, this is Chris.
Hi, Chris. What city are you calling from?
Houston, Northwest side.
Well, it's good to have you on the show. Do you have a question for Ed?
Yes, I would like to know, how soon will it be before I can walk down the street with a blunt in my hand and nothing won't happen to me?
I'm not a prognosticator. I can't tell you that. But I do think that when the marijuana laws change, they will change very rapidly. Just as apartheid went down in South Africa and the Soviet Union disintegrated within a couple of years. I think that's the kind of situation we're going to have here. When they change, they'll change quickly. And I think it's getting ready because the majority of people in the United States do not think that people should go to prison for marijuana.
And I got one more question.
Go ahead, sir.
I wonder, is it real bad if you mix alcohol with weed?
They potentiate each other. That means that if you're drinking alcohol and you smoke a joint, it's going to make the alcohol seem more active. It's not going to be active, but it's going to seem that way. And so you'll be more out of control. And, you know, with heroin, one thing that they found with heroin is, and marijuana, is that when they used morphine as an analgesic, you know, as a pain reliever,
yes,
that they only needed 10% of the morphine if they used marijuana as well, so to get the same pain relief.
Less damage to the internal systems, yeah. And it's still the same relief. That's wonderful. Ed, let's go ahead and move to our next caller. We have Dave calling from Liverpool. Dave.
Dave, it's Dave.
Dave, do you have a question for Ed?
Yeah, Ed made reference to the genetics of the seeds, and I know that you can order seeds, but I was unaware of the fact that they would ship them into the United States, and you know, and that kind of makes me paranoid to do that.
Well, Canada is a very nice country to visit.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dave. We appreciate it. All right. Let's see who's next up. We have an anonymous female caller. Hello, line three.
Hi.
Hello. Do you have a question to ask Ed?
I do, and it is going to sound like the stupidest question in the world, and I don't know how you can possibly answer it. But, Ed, I've been following your case, or I was as it was going on, and, you know, I was so worried for you. I was thinking every day, oh, my God, you know, this guy's going to go to prison for 10 years. And so my question to you was, I know the climate is totally different in California than it is in Texas, but I was just wondering, Did you have any clue that you were going to get the sentence that you got?
Well, my lawyers fretted and everything, but I always knew that I would never do more time.
Yeah.
And I told the press that, and I believed it myself. And
right.
I think that if I had not believed that, I would have gotten, or they would have tried to give me more time.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was a spiritual thing.
Well, you know, it's not just a spiritual thing, but it's a question of having confidence to do what's right, you know. And part of the confidence is a confidence that if you're doing what's right, eventually it's going to come out the right way. You know, I know nature isn't like that. But,
or the judicial system.
Right. But right. I knew that, you know, I had a lot of people on my side. And I'll say, you know, you said, well, it's a spiritual thing, but let me say this, that if I hadn't had the entire community behind me, and when I say the entire community, I don't just mean the you know, typical marijuana people and, you know, who...
I'm familiar with
I don't that. I don't denigrate at all, but, you know, when the press started coming out, you know, the straight press...
Right.
And straight TV and radio stations.
The New York Times.
That's right. And when that started happening, and when people around the world started getting concerned about this, right?
Right.
When that started happening, that's when I knew that it was reaching a tipping point.
Yeah.
Where it was changing the paradigm in which medical marijuana was being viewed, because it wasn't any longer so-called medical marijuana.
Right.
You never heard what message does this send to the kids?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? You don't hear that. You didn't hear that anymore with medical marijuana.
Dean says it every time he signs off the, or he used to all the time when he signs off the 420 drug war news, he'd say the drug war is almost over.
Yeah.
You know.
I just say we need to get on board the train. They cannot stop us.
Yeah.
One more thing. I just want to plug DPFT for people here in Texas. There's a group of people you would never expect that are in this organization that are working on drug policy, and they're doing a dynamite job, and they have a listserv called... What is it?
Let's give them DPFT.org.
There you
Wait,
go.
Let me say one thing here. I'm sure that a lot of us and a lot of the people who listen to your show have pretty progressive views, especially for Texas, not only about marijuana, but perhaps about other social and political issues. And so they're used to being the minority. They're used to voting to lose, you know, sort of, if you know what I
right,
mean.
Right, right.
But in this area, first of all, in medical marijuana, 70 to 80% of Americans think that medical marijuana should be available. Okay? 70 to 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not the minority. We are the majority. And 49% of Americans don't think that... A majority of Americans now think that people should not go to jail for marijuana.
Right.
So it's really the tail wagging the dog. It's a small minority, you know, just as the Bush has gathered these small minorities on various issues.
Yeah.
But it's a small minority, that tail that's wagging the dog. We are the majority. That's what we have to remember. We don't have to beg. We can go to these politicians and, you know, that's what we did in San Francisco.
Right.
There was a real conservative candidate, sheriff, district attorney. And 4 years ago, he lost because of the medical marijuana community. The same thing happened up in Humboldt and Mendocino, and it's affected all over the Northern California. It's a potent issue, and politicians just don't realize it. And once DPF starts going there, and ASA and a few other organizations, they're going to feel the effects of a very large constituency who's either tired of being harassed or tired of being messed up or messed with, or seeing their friends or their loved ones, or just seeing the Constitution trampled on over a simple herb.
And we got plenty of doctors and lawyers in this movement, and just people that just see what's wrong about it. So anyway, I'm going to let you go.
Thank you, caller.
We have KPFT, so we can do it too. See ya.
You bet. Hello, Derek.
Hi. How you doing?
Yes, sir. You have a question to ask Ed.
I was just wondering, what more can we do? It seems that all the I guess hotheads, if you will, are all in hiding and in fear of coming forward to express how they feel about marijuana laws. And I wanted to know what I could do to help everybody out and get everybody knowing that there are a lot of people on the same level and they don't have to be afraid.
Okay.
Okay. Well, are you involved with an organization?
Not yet. Not necessarily.
Well, that would be something. People just mentioned DPFT.org. Yeah, and that would be a good way to start. Actually start doing something.
I'm president of Houston Normal. That's Houston.
Oh, you're
NORML.org. We need your help.
You have to start doing something. You can't just say, what can we do? I mean, let's say you were living on a dangerous street and you wanted a traffic light.
Yeah.
So what would you do? You talk with some neighbors about it and see how they felt like it, and then the neighbors would all go and, whether collectively or through a representative, go see the city and things like that.
Yeah,
they'd write letters. They contribute money. You know, one of the problems with marijuana legalization is that people have $50 and $80 for an eighth of good marijuana, but they don't have $50 or $80 to see it legal.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a shame.
Have you ever contributed money to a marijuana organization?
Well, I contributed money to KPFT and, things like that. But other than that, I haven't been able to, hear, I've kept a 420, news program every once in a while, but I never got, a number or anything. So this is basically my first step in, trying to, get involved and understand.
Well, Derek, I do recommend DPFT. That's Drug Policy Forum of Texas.org. We're going to move to line four. Randy.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Randy.
Oh, hello there.
Hey, Randy, you have a question to ask Ed?
Yeah, I was wondering
quickly
if Ed knows of any particular case histories in which doctors have prescribed marijuana as an antidepressant.
Yes.
Because I know it works that way. I just hadn't heard of any cases.
Yes, and also for behavioral problems. There's a lot of it documented in there's a book by Ethan Russo that goes into that. You could just look up Dr. Ethan Russo and you on the internet, and his books were on Amazon, and his books will come up.
Okay, Randy, I hate to cut you short. We got two people here. I want to get to at least one of them. Line five. Hello, is that Anon?
Yes.
Hello. Do you have a quick question?
Going back to the discussion about medical marijuana, I had a severe back injury, and the doctor prescribed me antidepressants, just like previous caller was talking. Well, I found in my personal opinion that marijuana works.
Manny, we've got to cut you short. We are flat out of time. I thank all the callers. Ed, thank you so much, sir. And in closing, especially in this, the Alcoholics Annual Day of Liberation, I must once again ask you to beware. Because not only do you not know what's in that bag, after a couple of drinks, you don't even know how many drinks you've had. Please be careful. And thank you, everybody. Happy New Year.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.